Welcome to the Voice of America in Mandarin.
这里是美国之音的中文广播。现在就开始今天下午六个小时的中文节目。
各位听众好，现在是2016年5月5日星期四，美国东部时间早上5点，北京时间傍晚5点。请听这个时段的美国之音新闻。星期三，美国共和党总统参选人俄亥俄州州长卡西奇宣布退出竞选，使亿万富翁房地产大亨川普成为共和党的推定候选人。卡西奇的温和派立场没有获得很多选民的认同，他只在家乡俄亥俄州得到了153张代表人票。德克萨斯州国会参议员克鲁兹星期二在印第安纳州初选中落败后已经宣布退选。在竞选之初，有17名共和党总统的参选人角逐本党候选人提名。克鲁兹和卡西奇曾经试图进行合作，以阻止川普获得确保本党提名所需要的1237张代表人票。在欧洲方面，欧盟委员会近日公布了分析人士所说的一个应急计划的细节，以应对数十年来欧洲最严重的移民危机。这个计划包括一个公平机制，要求各国接受一定数量的难民和支付相当于罚款的金额。该计划立即在中欧和东欧国家引起强烈反弹。这些国家之前没有理会欧盟要求所有成员国接受难民份额的呼吁。欧盟官员说，这一全面修改欧盟庇护制度的计划旨在确保各成员国处理一定比例份额的流动移民。赴欧洲的移民人数去年达到了100万，提案中包括取消对土耳其公民免签证旅行限制的建议。欧盟议会6月份将就这一提案进行表决。俄罗斯炮兵部队星期三参加了叙利亚北部城市阿勒颇的战斗，反叛力量和阿萨德政权一年来在那里进行了激烈的争夺，近两个星期则遭受政府军的猛烈空袭。叛军指挥官说，这是俄国地面部队第一次在沿海的拉塔基亚省或巴尔米拉以外的地区协助叙利亚政府军。与此同时，美国国务院说，美国和俄罗斯达成了一项协议，将叙利亚的停止敌对行动扩大至阿勒颇，同时承认在一些地方发生持续战斗的报道。政府活动人士说，在叛军推进到叙利亚政府军控制的西部地区的时候，有数十人被打死。索马里的一名高级情报官员对美国之音说，亲伊斯兰国的索马里激进分子人数增多，而且得到了来自也门的资金和军事支持。前邦特兰情报局局长侯赛因说，这个亲伊斯兰国分支组织去年10月份成立，当时只有大约20到30名成员，随后建立训练基地并且招募战斗人员。侯赛因说，目前这个组织已经有100到150名战斗人员。侯赛因表示，伊斯兰国欢迎索马里分支，并开始通过在也门的分支为其提供物资。以色列军方说，星期三夜晚对加沙地带的4个哈马斯目标发动了空袭行动，在以巴边界紧张局势再次升级之际，以色列星期三早些时候开始了攻击行动。以色列军方发表声明说，空袭的目标是位于加沙地带北部的4个哈马斯恐怖组织的基础设施，这是对哈马斯袭击以色列军队所做出的反应的一部分。以色列军方说，哈马斯星期三的时候向以色列发射了迫击炮弹。目前还没有任何组织宣称对迫击炮弹袭击事件负责，但是哈马斯和另外一个巴勒斯坦激进组织伊斯兰圣战运动则分别发表声明，警告以色列军队不要在边界地带加强军事行动。另外，以色列表示，哈马斯正在挖掘从加沙地带通向以色列境内的地道。以色列军方的发言人列伊说，这是以色列发动空袭的原因之一。各位听众，以上就是这个时段的美国之音新闻，感谢收听。
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Moore. Welcome to Functioning in Business.
各位听众好，我是杨晨，欢迎收听商务通英语。
Functioning in Business is an intermediate level business English course with a focus on American business practices and culture.
商务通英语是中等程度的商务英语课程，课程题材以美国的实践和文化为主，通过电台播音室里的采访和绘画讲授美国英语。今天我们要复习本星期的课程，第一课着重谈工作职责。首先请听节目主持人 Elizabeth 同工程师 Mike Epstein 进行的一次访谈。
Welcome to our show. We have a new guest today. His name is Mr. Michael Epstein. Mr. Epstein is Senior Systems Engineer at Advanced Technologies Incorporated. Hello, Mr. Epstein. Thank you for coming to our program.
It's my pleasure. Please call me Mike.
Okay, Mike. Can you tell us a little about Advanced Technologies?
Well, we're located in Sunnyvale, California.
That's in Silicon Valley, right?
That's right. It's about 40 miles south of San Francisco.
And what does your company produce?
We make electronic components for computers.
Where do you sell your products?
We sell our components in domestic markets and also overseas.
You're a systems engineer, is that correct?
That's right.
What are your main responsibilities?
My main job is to reduce production costs. That's how I became involved in the negotiations with International Robotics. My job was to find ways to cut production costs for the factory we were building near San Francisco.
I see.So you thought industrial robots could provide some cost savings.
Exactly.
Mike, as you know, we'll be talking with you, Shirley Graham, and Charles Blake over the next several weeks. We'll be discussing Charles Blake's trip from China to the United States to visit you and Ms. Graham at Advanced Technologies.
Yes, Mr. Blake came to talk to us about International Robotics industrial robots.
And how did you meet Mr. Blake?
I met him in Beijing.I went there to attend a trade show, and he was at the show representing his company. I was interested in the robots his company produces. I thought they might be helpful in our manufacturing process. I invited Mr. Blake to come to Advanced Technologies to talk with us about selling us his robots.
Thank you, Mike. Let's open up the phone lines and see if we have any callers.Caller number one, you're on the air with Functioning in Business.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Epstein, I'm a systems engineer too, and I have a question for you.
Great. Go ahead.
You said that you were involved in a project to build a new factory. How many factories does Advanced Technologies have?
We currently have 4 in the U.S. and 2 abroad.
Where are they located?
Our main factory is in Los Angeles.And we have smaller factories in Northern California.
What about overseas?
We have 1 factory in the Philippines and 1 in Mexico.
I see. Thank you.
Caller number 2, you're on the air.
Thank you. Mr. Epstein, I was wondering what products Advanced Technologies manufactures.
Well, we make electronic components and office computers.
What kinds of electronic components?
Mostly computer related.
I see.Does your company currently use robots on your assembly lines?
Yes, we do. The work has to be very precise.
I see. Thank you very much.
Mr. Epstein, thank you for being on our show.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Let's take a short break.
是长期在一家公司任职好，还是经常变换工作好？
Hello again. We're here with Gary Engleton, our business language expert. We have an email question for you, Gary. The question is, in the U.S., is it better to stay with one company or to change jobs?
If you want to be an important executive in a large corporation,It is probably better to change companies at least once or twice. Large corporations hire at least half of their top executives from outside the company. You should try to stay at each job for at least a year, however. Otherwise, it will look bad.
Here's another email question. What should I do if I want to change jobs?
Well, the most important thing is to keep your skills up to date. This is especially important if you aren't young anymore. It is unfortunate, but some employers may think that your knowledge is out of date. Take college classes in your field at night, or on weekends, or even on the internet.
Do you have any other advice?
Yes, stay in close contact with everyone you know in other companies. Send them friendly emails and cards. Ask them for advice and offer yours. Build up your network. This network will be useful if you need their help to move to their company someday.
Thank you, Gary. Let's take a break.
今天的商务对话教我们怎样向别人介绍你自己的工作职责。现在就请听这次培训班上的对话。
Okay, before we get started, let's go around the table and introduce ourselves. My name is Rachel Jones, and I'm a cultural sensitivity trainer. I train executives to understand cultural differences in the workplace. How about you, Dan?
My name is Dan Alvarez.I'm an accountant at Acme Accounting. I prepare tax documents for large and small businesses.
I'm Janine Walters. I'm a sales representative for Ace Department Stores. I handle sales for the Northeastern United States.
My name is George Patowski. I'm general manager at Astro Electronics. We sell TVs, VCRs, radios, that sort of thing. I'm in charge of the sales personnel, and I make sure that our inventory is up to date.
Thank you all for those introductions.
Gary 提示
Welcome back. It's time for Gary's tips. What's your topic for today, Gary?
Today, I'll be talking about describing your job responsibilities. In many situations, you need to describe what you do in your job.In a job interview, for example, you need to be able to state two or three of your main responsibilities. And when you meet other business people at a meeting, a trade show, or even at a party, they may ask you what you do in your job. You should be able to describe what you do in one or two sentences. Think of a clear way to describe what you do. Let's listen again to part of the business dialogue. Listen for the expressions, I train...And I prepare.
My name is Rachel Jones, and I'm a cultural sensitivity trainer. I train executives to understand cultural differences in the workplace. How about you, Dan?
My name is Dan Alvarez. I'm an accountant at Acme Accounting. I prepare tax documents for large and small businesses.
Let's listen to some more of the business dialogue. This time, listen for the phrases,I handle, and I'm in charge of.
I'm Janine Walters. I'm a sales representative for Ace Department Stores. I handle sales for the Northeastern United States.
My name is George Patowski. I'm general manager at Astro Electronics. We sell TVs, VCRs, radios, that sort of thing. I'm in charge of the sales personnel, and I make sure that our inventory is up to date.
We just heard people describing what they do in their jobs. Try writing down what you do in your work. Then think of one or two sentences that clearly describe what you do and practice saying them. Well, that's all we have time for today. I hope today's tips were helpful.
Thanks, Gary.
本星期第二课主要讲怎样介绍你的工作经历。首先是访谈时间。
Our guest today is Mr. Michael Epstein. Hello again, Mike. Thank you for coming back to our program.
Hello again. It's nice to be back.
You said you're a systems engineer at Advanced Technologies. Is that correct?
That's right.
What's your background, Mike?
I have a background in both engineering and business.
I see.Where did you study engineering?
At Stanford. I majored in electrical engineering.
And when did you graduate?
1988. I graduated in 1988.
I see. And what did you do after graduation?
My first job was as an engineer for a small company in San Francisco.
And what were your responsibilities?
I was a quality assurance engineer. I worked for them for just under 2 years.
Why did you leave?
I became more interested in the business side of things, so I decided to go back to school to get my MBA.
Did you go back to Stanford?
Yes, I did. I was married at the time, and my wife was also working in San Francisco, so I didn't want to leave the Bay Area.
When did you get your MBA?
In 1992.
Then what?
Well, I was looking for a position with a medium-sized company. Advanced technology seemed like the right place for me.
And now you are senior systems engineer there?
That's right.
Do you like your work?
Yes, I do. Very much.
What do you do when you're not working, Mike?
Well, I enjoy golf, but I don't get much time to play.
Hello
again. We're here with Gary Angleton, our business language expert. Let's look at our email questions, Gary.
All right.
Our first question is, how much vacation do Americans get?
Most American workers get at least 2 weeks vacation. In some companies, workers get longer vacations after a few years. In addition, most companies give their workers some holidays, like Christmas and July 4th, and some days of sick time. Some part-time workers, however, are not paid for vacations.
Thanks, Gary. Our second question is, what is the average work day and work week?
We generally think of an 8-hour day and a 40-hour week as normal. High-level executives, however, are usually expected to work as much as 50 to 60 hours a week because they are paid so much. But at startup companies, people work even more hours, sometimes for very little pay.
Thanks for your comments, Gary.
My pleasure.
Let's take a short break.
Can you tell me a little about the jobs you've held?
Certainly. How far back would you like me to go?
Tell me about the two jobs you held before your current job.
All right. Well, from 1991 to 1994, I was an assistant manager at a food processing plant in New Jersey. I was in charge of scheduling workers on the assembly line. Then, at the end of 1994, I took a position as general manager with Ace Foods. I held that position until I moved to my current position in 1997.
And what were your responsibilities as general manager?
As general manager, I made sure production schedules were met.
Gary 提示。
Welcome back. It's time for Gary's Tips. What's your topic for today, Gary?
Today, I'll be talking about describing your job history. Last week, we talked about how to talk about your educational background in a job interview. Often you will be asked in a job interview to describe your job history. An interviewer might ask you to describe the previous jobs you have held. In your description, you should say what your job title was, where you worked, when you held the position, and what your job responsibilities were. Let's listen to a portion of the business dialogue where Ms. White tells about her job at a food processing plant. Try to answer these two questions. What was Ms. White's job title? Where did she work? Let's listen.
Tell me about the two jobs you held before your current job.
All right. Well, from 1991 to 1994, I was an assistant manager at a food processing plant in New Jersey.
What was Ms. White's job title? She was assistant manager. Where did she work? Ms. White didn't give the name of the company, but she said she worked at a food processing plant in New Jersey. Listen again to part of the dialogue and answer these two questions. When did Ms. White work as assistant manager?
What were Ms. White's responsibilities? Let's listen.
Well, from 1991 to 1994, I was an assistant manager at a food processing plant in New Jersey. I was in charge of scheduling workers on the assembly line.
When was Ms. White assistant manager? She was assistant manager from 1991 to 1994. And what were Ms. White's responsibilities? She was in charge of scheduling workers. Well, that's all we have time for today. I hope today's tips were helpful.
Thanks very much, Gary.
由 Elizabeth 采访先锋技术公司的副总裁 Shirley Graham。
Our guest today is Ms. Shirley Graham. Ms. Graham is Senior Vice President at Advanced Technologies. Good evening, Ms. Graham. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
We have already met Mike Epstein, who is a Senior Systems Engineer at your company. He explained to us how he met Charles Blake in China at a trade show. Mr. Epstein was interested in purchasing industrial robots from Mr. Blake's company for one of your factories.
Yes, that's right. Mr. Epstein felt that the industrial robots would increase productivity at our new factory.
And you were also involved in the negotiations about the robots?
Yes, I was. Both Mr. Epstein and I met with Mr. Blake when he visited our company.
We'll be talking more about those meetings in the coming weeks. Let's tell our listeners a little about your work at Advanced Technologies. As Vice President, what are your main responsibilities?
One thing I do is oversee our manufacturing plants and facilities. Last year, we built a new factory, and of course, we're always modernizing our existing facilities.
I see. And what are your main concerns in the construction of a new factory?
That's a very complex question. Of course, one concern is keeping costs within limits. We also have to be concerned with a design that will help improve our productivity and provide flexibility for the future.
How many people work for you?
Well, I have 5 senior engineers who report directly to me, including Mike Epstein. I also have my own support staff.
Before coming to Advanced Technologies, what did you do?
I worked for Boston Electronics for 5 years.
And what did you do there?
I was in charge of marketing.
Why did you leave?
I felt that I could handle more responsibility, and the company wasn't growing at that time, so I began looking for a new position.
Did you work with an executive recruiter?
Yes, I did. She was very helpful. She told me that there was a position opening up at Advanced Technologies.
What attracted you to Advanced Technologies?
The opportunities for growth and for greater responsibility.
I see. Do you feel that you made a good choice?
Oh, definitely. My work is challenging, and I'm well rewarded.
Where do you live?
My husband and I live in Woodside. That's a little town about 30 miles south of San Francisco.
Oh, what does your husband do?
He's a high school teacher.
And what do you like to do in your free time?
Well, my husband and I both love horseback riding. We don't have any children, so we spend a lot of time with the horses.
Where do you go riding?
We ride in the hills above Woodside.
How interesting. Well, thank you, Ms. Graham. Let's open up the phone lines and see if we have any callers. Caller number 1, you're on the air with Functioning in Business.
Hello, I have a question for Ms. Graham. What is your educational background? What prepared you to handle your current position?
I graduated from Mills College in 1988 with a business major. Then I worked for several years in sales and marketing. In 1990, I went back to school to get my MBA.
Where did you go?
I went to the University of Pennsylvania.
I see. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today.
It was my pleasure, Elizabeth.
Hello again. We're here with Gary Engleton, our business language expert. Let's look at our email questions, Gary.
All right.
Our first question is it common for a woman to be a manager in the U.S.?
In fields such as law and medicine, the percentage of women is increasing quickly. However, in corporations, there are still not many women in the top jobs.
Here's another question. Is women's pay equal to men's?
In corporations, women still generally make less than men. Pay equality is an important issue in business.
And one more question. Is it difficult for a woman to supervise men?
Some men don't like to have a female boss, but that's changing.
In my experience, most of the men I supervise accept me as their supervisor.
Yes, I think most men today are quite comfortable with a woman as a supervisor.
Let's take a break, Gary.
Okay.
Hi, my name's Fred Jones.
Hello, Fred. I'm Sue Carter.
Nice to meet you, Sue.
Nice to meet you too, Fred. What type of work are you in?
I work for Ace Department Stores in New York. I'm a sales manager.
I work in sales too. I'm the sales rep for Acme Electronics in Philadelphia.
How do you like living in Philadelphia?
Philadelphia is great. The people are very nice.
Have you lived there a long time?
No, I just moved there 2 years ago. How about you? Do you like living in New York City?
Well, the weather is terrible, but I love the theaters and restaurants.
Do you go to the theater a lot?
Yes, my wife and I see a lot of plays. New York is great.
Gary 提示，这次我们请 Gary 谈一谈工商人士之间应当怎样谈论私事。
Welcome back. It's time for Gary's Tips. What's your topic for today, Gary?
Today, I'll be talking about personal questions in business settings. Personal questions are questions about your living situation, family, and interests. Some personal questions are safe to ask, and others are not so safe. When you're in a business setting, it's best to stick to safe topics. Some safe topics are where someone lives, how long the person has lived there, and what interests a person has. Let's listen to the business dialogue again. In the conversation, Fred asks Sue how she likes living in Philadelphia and how long she's lived there. Let's listen.
I'm the sales rep for Acme Electronics in Philadelphia.
How do you like living in Philadelphia?
Philadelphia is great. The people are very nice.
Have you lived there a long time?
No, I just moved there 2 years ago.
Then Sue asks Fred if he likes living in New York. She also asks him a question about his interest in the theater. Let's listen.
How about you? Do you like living in New York City?
Well, the weather is terrible, but I love the theaters and restaurants.
Do you go to the theater a lot?
Yes, my wife and I see a lot of plays. New York is great.
There are some topics which are not safe to ask someone unless you know the person very well. You shouldn't ask if someone is married, or about the person's age or religion, or about how much money a person makes or spends. It's also a bad idea to talk about politics in business situations. It is much better to stay with very safe topics. Well, that's all we have time for today. I hope today's tips were helpful.
Thanks very much, Gary. Well, our time is up. Tune in again next time for Functioning in Business. See you then.
今天的商务通英语就复习到这里，谢谢各位收听，我们下星期再见。
For further study, a Functioning in Business study kit is available from your local bookstore.
为了帮助学习，商务通英语备有课本和录音带，整套辅导学习材料，听众可以去本地的书店购买。
请听美国之音新闻。星期三，美国共和党总统参选人俄亥俄州州长卡西奇宣布退出竞选，使亿万富翁、房地产大亨川普成为共和党的推定候选人。卡西奇的温和派立场没有获得很多选民的认同，他只在家乡俄亥俄州得到了153张代表人票。德克萨斯州国会参议员克鲁兹星期二在印第安纳州初选中落败后宣布退选。在竞选之初，有17名共和党总统参选人角逐本党的候选人提名。克鲁兹和卡西奇曾试图进行合作，以阻止川普获得确保本党提名所需要的1237张代表人票。欧盟委员会近日公布了分析人士所说的一个应急计划的细节，以应对数十年来欧洲最严重的移民危机。这项计划包括一个所谓公平机制，要求各国接受一定数量的难民或者支付相当于罚款的金额。这项计划立即在中欧和东欧国家引起了强烈反弹，这些国家之前没有理会欧盟要求所有成员国接受难民份额的呼吁。欧盟官员说，这一全面修改欧盟庇护制度的计划旨在确保各成员国处理一定比例份额的流动移民。赴欧洲的移民人数去年达到了百万，提案中包括取消对土耳其公民免签证旅行限制的建议。欧盟议会6月份将就这一提案进行表决。俄罗斯炮兵部队星期三参加了叙利亚北部城市阿勒颇的战斗，反叛力量和阿萨德政权一年来在那里激烈争夺，近两个星期则遭到政府军的猛烈空袭。叛军指挥官说，这是俄罗斯的地面部队第一次在沿海的拉塔基亚省和巴拉米拉以外的地区协助叙利亚政府军。与此同时，美国国务院说，美国和俄罗斯达成了一项协议，将叙利亚的停止敌对行动扩大至阿勒颇，同时承认在一些地方发生持续战斗的相关报道。政治活动人士说，在叛乱推进到叙利亚政府军控制的西部地区时，有数十人被打死。反叛武装在几个小时的激战之后被迫撤退。叛军指挥官很久以前一直警告说，政府军未来几个星期会发动一次大规模的进攻，试图夺回反叛武装控制的城市的部分地区，因为这里仍然是政府军的一个关键战场。冲突发生之际，外交官们正在柏林努力停止这场战斗。索马里的一名高层情报官员对美国之音表示，亲伊斯兰国的索马里激进分子的人数增多，而且得到来自也门的资金和军事支持。前邦特兰情报局局长侯赛因说，这个亲伊斯兰国分支组织去年10月份成立，当时只有大约20到30名成员，随后建立了训练营地并且招募战斗人员。侯赛因说，目前这个组织已经有100到150名战斗人员。侯赛因表示，伊斯兰国欢迎索马里分支，并开始通过在也门的分支为其提供物资。侯赛因说，索马里政府和非盟军队不能够在军事上战胜青年党或者伊斯兰国分支，他们应在意识形态上与这些激进组织进行抗衡。以色列军方说，星期三夜间对加沙地带的四个哈马斯目标发动了空袭。在以巴边界紧张局势再次升级之际，以色列星期三早些时候开始了空袭行动。以色列军方发表声明说，空袭的目标是位于加沙地带北部的四个哈马斯恐怖组织的基础设施，这是对哈马斯袭击以色列军队所做出的反应。以色列军方说，哈马斯星期三向以色列发射迫击炮弹，目前还没有任何组织宣称对迫击炮弹袭击事件负责，但是哈马斯和另外一个巴勒斯坦激进组织伊斯兰圣战运动则分别发表声明，警告以色列军队不要在边界地带加强军事行动。以色列表示，哈马斯目前正在挖掘从加沙地带通向以色列境内的地道。以色列军方的发言人列伊说，这是以色列发动空袭的原因之一。各位听众，以上就是这个时段的美国之音新闻，是由申华从美国首都华盛顿向各位听众播报。
以下为您重播美国之音 VOA 卫视时事大家谈节目。因为是节目录音，请您不要拨打电话。
各位听众、观众朋友，大家好，欢迎收听、收看美国之音 VOA 卫视在5月4号星期三从美国首都华盛顿为您现场直播的时事大家谈节目，我是黄耀毅。中国与俄罗斯都对于言论自由还有新闻自由采取严厉的审查，现在这两国更打算在互联网审查上面进行合作。上个星期，两国共同举办了网络空间发展与安全论坛，包括中国国家互联网信息办公室主任卢伟、中国网络防火长城创始人方冰心等等都参加了会议。这是否代表中国的防火长城将一路修到莫斯科呢？而中国与俄罗斯是否将成为世界最大的内部网？这对于中俄两国的网络用户将产生什么样的冲击？今天参与这个讨论的来宾，一位是独立评论人士网名北风的温云超。北风透过 Skype 视频从纽约参加节目。北风你好。
哎，你好，大家好。
另外一位是为国际记者保护协会、改变中国网站以及美国笔会等等担任研究工作的独立研究员王亚秋女士。王女士透过 Skype 视频从洛杉矶参加节目。王女士你好。
你好，大家好。
此外，我们的观众还有听众热线已经开通，请大家可以拨打4001200051一起来参加我们话题的讨论。那首先第一题，我先请教一下北风哦，就是说我们知道在现实层面来说，对于比起中国来说，俄罗斯在互联网上的审查跟管控是相对宽松许多的，那这究竟是因为政治的原因，还是因为技术上它达不到呢？
我想首先在政治层面上来说，中国是一个比较快的专制国家，而俄罗斯是一个比较快的民主国家，那再不济它也是一个竞争性威权的国家，所以这两者之间我们就发现没有可比性。起码在俄罗斯，他们的宪法和法律还是保障了俄罗斯民众的基本的言论自由。所以我们如果翻查俄罗斯关于网络控制方面的立法的话，我们也只能找到他们在2012年，通过了一个针对儿童性安全保护的互联网信息方面的立法，例如针对一些儿童色情、一些毒品、一些儿童罪恶方面的一些立法。然后呢，2014年通过了一个关于那个要求博客作者实名制这么一个法律。除此之外，我们并没有看到更多的他们针对所谓的不良信息的立法。当然，他们俄罗斯的总统普京他们也今年2月份任命了一个他们的网络顾问，他们也试图来推动针对的不良言论，例如互联网的一些罪恶，一些我看一下，就是拜金主义犯罪混者恐怖分子的这言论进行立法。但事实上他们现在只是在这个立法进程当中，还没有把整个互联网的对内的严格审查和对内的这种封堵作为实际的一个措施进行执行。所以以中国的现在的国家防火墙来对比的话，完全是两种不同层面的那东西。
是，那北风，那为什么现在这一次中俄两国要举办这样一个会议？那俄罗斯如果说你所说的他其实并没有要对互联网进行那么严厉的审查，那现在还要跟中国学习什么东西呢？
我想这个东西就是说，两个中国和俄罗斯是各怀鬼胎，各取所需。对于中国来讲，他需要改变整个国际的互联网的现有的管理的规则，这一点它需要俄罗斯的协助和配合。因为俄罗斯他们现在也面临，就是说俄罗斯国内的人民对普京的20年来的这种统治导致的这种对外的孤立、对内的这种经济崩溃产生了越来越多的不满，甚至有包括像卡内基基金会一些专家分析说，普京有可能会在1年后失败，甚至失去政权。我想普京是面临一个立刻的危机，让他采取一些措施来封堵有可能由互联网发起的针对他的批评和一些现实的游行示威或者是更大规模的行动。但是对于中国来讲，其实中国压根就不会把自己一整套 GFW 的技术出口给他。万一俄罗斯普京之后上来一个比较推崇民主的候选人，那岂不把自己的技术全盘给出卖？但是中国需要在国际上倡导一个互联网主权的概念，他又不得不需要得到俄罗斯方面的配合。我想这是双方 在这个层面上开这么一个论坛的会议，然后希望有进一步的合作的原因所在。
是，那我请教一下王亚秋女士，刚才我们也提到说，这个中国在当然在记者上面的这个言论审查是很严重的，俄罗斯当然也有很多这样的类似的案例跟情况出现，对异议人士的打压。那么在互联网上面呢，我们现在看到俄罗斯，你认为他可能要来跟中国学习什么样子的做法，什么样子的技术？那我们也知道说，俄罗斯向来这个自称这个是在这个共产主义的老大哥，是中国的老大哥。那现在他会愿意这个低声下气的反过来接受中国的技术输出或者是价值观的输出吗？
第一个问题就关于俄罗斯可以向中国学习什么样的技术。有一点就是俄罗斯已经在向中国学习，一个就是俄罗斯要求外国公司对俄罗斯提供的网络服务的那个数据都要放在俄国的境内，并让俄国政府有那个可以就是对这些数据进行 access， 这个可以说是直接从中国学来的。另外的，我想可以学习的，比如说像中国，它把 Facebook、Google 这些都封了之后，它创造一个很好的一个取代品，像微博啊、微信，就是大家国内的人都用得很快乐，所以我觉得这个可能也是一个可以学习的地方吧。还有就比如说国内除了把就是。像国外的 Twitter、Facebook 封锁之外，它还有就是它自己就是中国政府用了很多的那个花了很多的金钱和精力投资，就是他做自己的宣传这方面，我估计俄罗斯也可以从向中国学习。至于俄罗斯人是否可以接受中国价值以及中国影响力的输出，我想这个可能比较难讲吧。因为现在俄罗斯人就是俄罗斯对中俄的关系比中国对中俄关系更加需求量更大，因为乌克兰危机之后西方国家对俄罗斯进行经济制裁，所以他现在处于一个非常不利的地位，所以对俄罗斯而言与中国的伙伴关系是痛苦的，或者说是让他觉得很悲屈的，但是是必须的。但对中国而言，就是俄罗斯的关系与俄罗斯的关系，它是不错，但并非是必须的。另外一个，我觉得就是说，中国和俄罗斯它的利益未必是完全是统一的。比如说，中国和俄罗斯都在中亚竞争影响力，俄罗斯要建立欧亚经济联盟，而中国是要提出那个“一带一路”并且要加强上海合作组织。还有就是说，俄罗斯和一些其他就中国家有军事的联系，军事和能源的联系，比如说印度啊、越南，这些都不是中国要看到的。所以说，俄罗斯和中国它的利益未必是很统一的，它在很多地方面都存在着利益上的矛盾。
是，那王女士想接请教您啊，我们刚才也提到，就是说。刚才北峰也说了，他认为说中国之所以想跟俄罗斯在互联网上来合作，是因为他想要改变世界互联网的这个话语权，还有他这个规则与体系。那就你来看的话，这是中国所希望达到的成果吗？那这对中国方面有什么样的好处？对俄罗斯又有什么好处呢？
我想我完全同意北峰所说的，一个是中国他自己想要就是那个他开了三届互联网大会，就提出那个互联网主权的概念，所以他想要把这个是从意识形态上要把这个输出去。另外对俄罗斯，就像北峰说的，就是俄罗斯他现在自己有很多的问题，普京他的那个政权也受到威胁，人民很不满，所以他想从控制互联网这个方面来巩固自己的政权。
这个我想补充两句。
好，北峰请说。
因为中国和俄罗斯现在都是面有强大的政权的这个危机方面的问题，也就是说他们都有对内内容进行严格审查的这种需要，中国已经正在进行当中，对于俄罗斯来讲可能是要马上进行。中国提出互联网主权这个概念，是试图把对内的这种严格控制和审查这种合法化和合理化，所以在这一点上来讲，当中国和俄罗斯联手去改变国际互联网的管理规则，并且倡导互联网目的，也就真正的是要针对内部的信息的严格控制和审查。
是，好，谢谢北峰。我们线上呢有位观众朋友打电话进来，我们先来听一下他的问题或者他的看法。我们请福建的陈先生发表你的看法。陈先生请说。
主持人你好。
你好。
嘉宾好。我觉得物以类聚，国以群分，中俄两国有共同的对手是美国，所以他们走得比较近。俄罗斯也是从专制制度走过来的，普京执政了十多年，事实上也是个独裁者。但是俄罗斯学中国搞防火墙，我觉得是损害了俄罗斯的国际形象，弊大于利。而不过呢，俄罗斯人民起码生活得比中国人民好，福利也比中国人民高，所以普京他的支持率是很高的。好，谢谢啊。
好的，谢谢福建陈先生。那北峰，我想请教一下，就刚才陈先生他的发言，他认为说这个其实中俄两国是这个所谓是兄弟的感觉哦，都是从专制体系出来的，所以做法会是类似的，你的看法怎么样？
我想这可能更多的是因为普京这个人的这种威权统治的基因的问题，他本身有这样的需求，他当然身上传承了当年克格勃或者是共产主义苏联的一整套的基因，这点我想是跟中国是契合的。但是我们如果回顾一下中俄之间的合作的话，那基本上无一例外的中国最后都会被俄罗斯所抛弃和出卖。我想这种大概都是一种我刚才说的叫各怀鬼胎、貌合神离，这是种各取所需，它不会是真正意义上的形成一个联盟。但是如果中国要发起一场互联网的新冷战的话，它又不得不拉俄罗斯入伙以取得支持。所以这方面来讲，就叫各取所需，我想是当下而不是联盟。
是，那北峰，那我也想直接请教你，你刚才说到说其实中俄两国都是各怀鬼胎，有自己的想法。那刚才这个王亚秋女士提到所谓的互联网主权的问题啊，所以你觉得说，但是他们又要共同的一起来合作来对抗西方，尤其是西方的互联网的自由，所以你认为说一个大的这个中俄的这个互联网，或者是这个大的这中俄的内部网，有可能因此而成立吗？就是为了要来把他们的这个一起来建立一个很大的中俄两国的互联网边界，来对抗西方的价值观。
我想这个可能性不太大，就是说中国也很有可能形成一个中国的国家的这个局域网，这个已经是基本上已经是个事实，并且现在从中国的国际互联网流量只占3%都不到这么一个比例来看，事实上已经是一个局域网。但是俄罗斯他们现在他们基本上还没有类似于中国国家防火墙这么一个体系，这一套体系的投入建设没有几年时间，我想是不可能够完成的。所以俄罗斯在这方面建成一个局域网的可能性并不大，并且普京很快可能就要面临他的政治危机，甚至政治生涯的结束。那接下来领导人还有没有意愿继续建这么一个在这方面投入也是疑问，并且中俄两国不可能构出两国人民互相用对方的扶翻墙的话，这也是够管制当局头疼的。所以这很有可能就是说，在一些有互联网审查过滤的国家，他们自己的内部的封闭，但是相互之间这种合作，我想可能性不会特别的大。
是，那王亚秋女士同样的问题还想请教您，就是你认为说你赞成北峰的说法吗？中俄两国不会成为一个大的局域网吗？
我觉得如果你真的要组成一个大的局域网，还是有很大的困难的，因为两个国家首先语言不通，其次你虽然你把那个就是说把那个很多东西屏蔽了，形成自己局域网，但是每个国家的那个人民他有自己不同的需求，你很难把它就是两个国家人民的一个网络搞成一块，我觉得这个是很难的。而且我也同意北峰说的，就是说现在就是在俄罗斯，就是说 Twitter、Facebook、Google， 就是所有的一些国际媒体国际网站，它都没有被封。如果你现在去封的话，民众的反应会非常非常大。
是，那您刚才提到说，所谓这个国际的一些社交媒体都没有封，所以说民众一旦封锁的话，民众的反应会很大。但您刚才也提到是说，他可以从中国学习到一些教训，例如说有自己的微信、有自己的微博。你认为看得到目前俄罗斯有朝这方面来做吗？
就说那个自由之家那个 Freedom of the Net， 它那个报告显示，就是俄罗斯的那个网络封锁这几年一直在变坏。但是至于它是否能达到就中国那种水平，一方面它能把 网络封锁做得这么好，一方面他又能创造出自己的那种网络的那些工具，这个就不大清楚了。我觉得我是从我的角度来讲。
是，那因为我知道您这个也帮这个国际保护记者协会做研究哦，所以在你的研究来看，你觉得说目前俄罗斯在互联网上的管控，是否对于俄罗斯的新闻自由有慢慢的更加严厉的趋势呢？
这肯定的，因为就是俄罗斯它之前就是对那个电视啊、报纸啊都是全面控制的，然后它这几年才发现，就是说对报纸和那个电视的控制是不够的，就是说你即使把网络，就是说你一些关键的一些网社交媒体那些机构领导人或拥有者进行控制，你还是无法控制民众的一些反应，因为他那个网络的那个内容都是民众自己写出来的，就是说你把那些就是办网站人给抓不是说控制了，你还是很难控制那个他那些网站上所产生的内容。
是。那个接下来我想请教一下北风哦，我们知道说讲到中国跟俄国的所谓的互联网或是这个上面的技术的话，都会联想到这两国的黑客，对不起，这两国的黑客的技术都很强大，对全世界人都造成威胁哦。所以在这方面的话，除了互联网技术上的合作，中俄两国在黑客上是否也可能进行合作，一起来同盟攻击西方的盟友呢？
我想在这一点上，中国的黑客跟俄罗斯的黑客又是截然的不同。俄罗斯的黑客跟以色列的黑客是全世界都知名的厉害，他们个人的黑客的技术可以说是独步全球，可以这么讲，并且他们的攻击的目标往往也不是一些重要的政府或者是军事的目标，而中国的黑客往往是有组织的，以政府为背景的甚至军队为背景的这种黑客。其实中国你留意一下过往的黑客案例当中，很少有个人黑客的案例被报道，这也可以看得出来，中国这种以政府国家为背景的这种黑客组织，他们本身就是这种统治当局的需要，他们需要用这个东西来获取包括像美国像西方国家的一些军事或者是商业等各方面的机密，甚至说不定俄罗斯也会成为中国的军方或者是政府黑客的一个目标之一。在这点上，双方我想他的合作也肯定也是处在一种貌合神离的情况。对俄罗斯来讲，他未必有能力有意愿去控制他的个人的黑客，那个对于中国来讲，而这种黑客行为恰恰是政府在背后支持和组织的，并且针对外来的黑客防疫方面，其实我们并看不到太多的有黑客针对中国的政府或者军方或者是商业机密攻击的目标。所以在这一点上，我想大家的姿态多于实际，大家共同扮演出一个受害者的形象，其实大家其实都是各取所需。
是，那北风，我想直接请教你，你刚才提到说中国与俄国之间的这个黑客的行为的不同，那现在我们尤其知道说像去年还有过去这几年来，这个中国的这个解放军的黑客呢，窃取了很多美国的政府或是军方或是商业的一些的机密资料，会不会因此这个给俄罗斯这个灵感了，认为说，哎，这样的做法其实也挺好的，而且我们也看不到中国有受到多大的惩罚，那是否俄罗斯也会来效仿？
我想在这方面，俄罗斯可能暗地里头，他们可能也有类似的项目，例如美国的临近计划，类似的一种安排，但是要像中国的这种解放军黑客这种针对商业机密、军事机密或者是一些政府雇员的信息做这样攻击，我想俄罗斯可能性不大。刚才我说了，俄罗斯只是一个现在是一个比较坏的民主政府，它充其量也就是还也是一个竞争性威权，所以他的现在的领导人他在台上，包括现在的议会，他们如果通过这样的法案或者是预算的话，他们接下来万一这个政府发生变化，政权发生变化的时候，他们可能就要受到非常大的压力，并且这些信息很有可能直接会给到西方政府这边。所以在这一点来看，因为大家的政权结构的基本构成不一样，所以我觉得俄罗斯像中国这样组织军方政府为背景的这种黑客去获取敌对国家的一个机密，这种可能性其实我认为不会太大。
是，我们线上呢有一位观众朋友打电话进来，我们来接听他的电话。我们请缅甸的张先生，张先生您好。
你好。
啊，请说。
我只是想说一下，我只是想说一下，我觉得你们这个电视台，观点有片面，凡事从两面看。一讲中国的就是讲中国不好，中国为什么建防火墙？长期以来就是美国对中方就是敌视的，你说他不能，他不建防火墙，就有一个小偷在你家城外，城外面，你不建墙吗？你不建那个防护网吗？所以啊，我对这现在深深懂中国的人极大的愤慨啊。
张先生，我想请教您，您刚才说到说建防火墙是因为认为说中国认为美国对中国敌视，但防火墙其实限制的是中国人到外面的世界来接触自由的互联网，这是不是跟他的目的自相矛盾呢？
也没矛盾啊。那为什么建防护网？我问你一个问题，为什么要建防护
网？我可以回应一下他这个问题。
来，我们先让张先生说一下。
你长期用放那个观点来强制人家在人家身上，可以吗？
哦，这样好。张先生说到说不应该用观点强制的加在别人的身上，那我们就请北方来回应一下：是共产党将他的观点强加在中国人民身上，还是自由的互联网让大家可以自由的选择观点呢？北方，
在这个方面，其实我们要去判断，其实我们把标准放回到本身的真实性的问题，就是说当中国不断的指责一些外媒对中国持负面的报道，并且持敌视的态度的时候，那我们就要看这些报道是真的还是假的，是否符合事实。另外一方面，对于中国人民民众来讲，他们是不是有权利的知道这些负面的信息？如果是，那我们当然就很难建立一个判断说，或者是得出一个结论说，这些外媒其实就是在敌视中国，因为他们报道是真实的东西，也是中国民众应该知道的东西。我们从最近发生的魏则西这个事件上，我们就知道了这个危害性有多大。当中国利用国家的防火墙，并且声称国家防火墙可以保护中国的民族产业和中国工业的时候，然后导致了百度在中国市场的这种垄断的地位。当魏则西身患绝症，他试图上网去查找治疗方案的时候，就被百度提供的这种不实信息所引导，最后付出了自己的生命。这个信息在中国引起了非常大的舆论的风波，但是今天中国政府已经下令全面禁止相关这方面的报道，特别是禁止涉及武警总医院的报道。那接下来问题是会不会有下一个受害者？因为所有的事情没有让民众知道，民众也不知道百度的信息有这样的问题，民众也不知道竟然武警军队的医院也就是一个骗子，那民众的权益如何保障？我想这个是对缅甸张先生最好的回应。当民众得不到充分的信息、全面的信息、对称的信息的时候，他们的判断就会受到影响，就会反过来伤害自己的利益。所以包括美国之音这些外媒，他们恰恰中国民众有一个正确的判断，而不是一个敌视的态度。
是，那王亚秋女士，我也想请你来回应一下缅甸张先生的说法。究竟说他认为说只要这个中国政府盖了一个防火墙，他就能把中国人民好好的保护起来，那就可以把例如说像这个魏则西事件，例如说像巴拿马文件这样的东西隔绝在外，你觉得这样真的是保护中国人民吗？
这个我觉得大家用过互联网、用过微博的人都知道，就是政府他所要删除的信息是哪些信息，是否是真的保护民众？就像北风说的魏则西事件，那这种过去的事情很多很多，他删除的大部分信息都是就是对中国政府不利的。那这些信息我们都知道，他就是说是反而是真实的。另外一个方面就是说就是说一些西方的反华言论啊，或者西方对中国那些邪恶的各种宣传之类的话，我觉得民众自己应该有一个就是说判断力。如果你觉得西方的他这种东西是假的或者是邪恶的，那你完全可以就是通过就是指出它是哪里是假的，哪些是错误的来进行反驳，而不是说把它全部封在墙内让大家不要看见。
是，好的，谢谢王亚秋女士。因为时间关系呢，关于中俄两国将如何在互联网审查上合作的讨论先告一段落。非常感谢网民北方的温云超先生，还有改变中国网站等来担任研究工作的独立研究员王亚秋女士参加节目的讨论。北京时间每天晚上8点到10点，别忘了锁定 VOA 卫视，我是黄耀毅，祝大家晚安，我们下次节目再见。